Time for another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and pleased to welcome back Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, who also directs education at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville.
Good morning.
Mike, good to have you back.
Hi, good morning.
Good to have you back. And Kristen Krokowski. Hi, Kristen.
Great to be here. I won't
turn your mic on. That'll even work better. Works better now. Now that I can hear you. Well, it's great to have you back as well. Kristen is the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, and they're with us today to talk about what's going on in the outdoors, maybe in the garden or on the lawn or with your trees on the lawn. We can deal with all kinds of things, and I hope you'll join in with your questions. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Kristen, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Oh, just putting everything to bed.
Yeah,
fertilizing the lawn for the last time, getting the rest of the crops in off the farm, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah, how about you, Mike?
I mowed over some of my perennials for my winterizing that I was doing. And at the gardens point of view, at Rotary Botanical Gardens, we're actually getting ready for a holiday light show. So here it is.
Now?
Halloween, and we're already thinking Christmas.
So when does when does the light show begin?
Second weekend in December.
Okay, so still a little off ways off.
Yeah, but we need every day to start preparing for it.
Okay. Well, we have an email from Maria. Wonders, is it possible to overwinter a rose geranium plant that has been grown in a garden? Would it be better to grow it outdoors in a pot during the summer, then bring it in for the winter? Mike, what do you think?
Well, I am thinking, if you're just referring to like the old-fashioned geraniums, the big red or white ones that yeah. we're thinking, you can bring them in to try to overwinter them, put them into a sunny window, and you can try to have them limp along through the winter to get them through next spring. They tend to get pretty ratty looking when you do that, but that can be done. You can try taking cuttings off one and starting them fresh and growing them indoors. That's another way of doing it. And I've read some places where people will actually uproot them and put them into brown paper bags and keep them in that ever elusive, unheated basement.
Yeah.
And you can try to overwinter things that way. So there's a lot of different methods to it. I've tried doing the overwintering in the pots, but they just get a little too ratty for my taste. I just get new ones
each
year.
If it's some kind of hardy geranium plant, the best thing to do is just to leave it outside to let it rest. Most of our plants up north that are hardy up here do a lot better if you give them that winter off instead of bring them in and out. So if it's a hardy geranium, leave it outside, mulch it in really good, and let it rest over the winter, and you'll have a better plant for it next year.
Yeah, we stuck a geranium plant that my wife happened to really like. We stuck it in the garage over winter, pulled it out in the spring, and it looked pretty good, actually. It didn't look as good as it did the first time around, but it was okay. It's back in the garage, or it's going back in the garage again. It is in the garage. So we'll see what happens. We could do it 2 years in a row. I don't know. Paul in Arborvitae will give you a chance to join in here. Hi, Paul. Paul, are you there? Oh, let's see. Let's get Paul on. Paul, hi.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
How are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I have a question about a corkscrew willow. We planted it about 3 years ago, and it's maybe 12 feet tall right now. It has a shoot growing off the base of the trunk, and we were wondering, is it possible to cut it and root that and start another tree, and when would be the best time to do that?
Yes, it would be possible. You would probably have the best results doing it probably the March-April period.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easiest to do it off of green wood, that new growth. And the best way to do it is if you have some vermiculite, just stick it in a container with some vermiculite, keep the vermiculite damp, and that will actually root it. Really easy to do with that and a lot of other woody plants.
Mm-hmm.
Does it need any fertilizer or anything? Or
no.
Nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever you're trying to start plants, that fertilizer really just boosts growth. And the last thing you want to do when you're trying to put on roots is to push something to grow leaves and things like that. So really, you don't want to worry about that too much. Some folks like to use rooting hormone, which is something you should be able to get most garden centers. Mm-hmm. But usually you see that a lot more in the spring. So you might want to use that, and you just stick the part you want to root, and then stick it in the vermiculite, and that should help.
With it being a willow, it should root fairly easily.
Yeah, moisture is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is there anything I need to do to the trunk of the tree after we cut it?
No.
No.
No. A lot of people want to use pruning paint, and pruning paint is only used if you're trying to seal a wound to keep insects carrying diseases from infecting the tree. So if you have to prune an oak tree during the growing season, or you have to prune an elm tree during the growing season, that's when we recommend using pruning paint. All other times, we do not recommend it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Judy in West Madison. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
A friend of mine brought me 2 high bush blueberries for my backyard. I live here in Madison. And he gave me some, I think it's peat moss. And I'm wondering if I should also go to the local coffee shop and get some coffee grounds. Because, we've got that wonderful clay soil.
So yeah. I'm guessing that the pH of your soil is high, just because
it's going to be high in Madison.
Yeah, so I'm guessing that it's over 7. And what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to dig a big hole. And you're going to have to replace the soil that's in there with the peat moss, and you're probably going to have to use quite a bit of sulfur. The coffee grounds aren't going to help you really long term.
Okay.
What you want to do is start applying elemental sulfur to the soil surface, and you're going to need to do that at least once a year, every year. And still, all soils want to revert to what they're supposed to be. We have so much limestone under our soil around here that soil is going to constantly push back up. So consider this experimental. And enjoy the process and be grateful for anything you get. And if you start to see blueberries forming, get some netting over it right away, because the birds will get those berries before you even think about picking them.
Yeah, my neighbor said she has some too, and she said I have to beat the chipmunks to it.
Mm-hmm.
The other question I had was if this is a good time of year for digging up some raspberry canes to transplant into my yard.
Sure. I mean, you can dig them up. They're probably dormant now. We wouldn't advise doing it in the spring when they're trying to fruit. So as long as they're dormant, I think you'd be fine.
And then transplant them right into the ground.
Yes.
And same kind of thing with the reducing the acidity or fixing the pH.
No, raspberries are fine. Raspberries are fine in pretty much a pretty broad range of pHs. And if they're growing, in your yard already, just move
them. Actually, these are from a neighbor. They would be from a neighbor's yard, but
soil should be the same.
If it's a neighbor, no problem. All right.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Judy. And moving right along, let's go to Joanne in Princeton. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Just fine. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you for your show.
Sure.
My house burned to the ground last December.
No.
And in the process of digging out the old foundation and putting in a new septic tank and all that stuff, my lawn now totally consists of sand that was, like from 8 feet down.
Mm.
It's not good. And I live up in Marquette County, so it's sandy anyway. That's what our soil is sand up here. But the lawn was growing. It had some good dirt on top of it. Anyway, so now the people are contemplating just hauling me a few loads of maybe 2 to 3 inches of black dirt in to cover this over next spring, and then I should be seeding it. I do have horses and horse manure. What should I do? Is that just going to work to just plant lawn on that black dirt, or do you have any suggestions?
I think it'd probably be easiest just to go with the black dirt.
Okay.
When they put it down, you'll want to make sure it's graded so they rake it out so it's nice and smooth, and any large debris that may be in there, rocks, clods, or anything else, are broken up or removed. Our turf grass is pretty resilient. It'll grow in a lot of different conditions.
Okay.
So as long as you just grade it out properly and do the necessary pre-prep to get the site ready, you should be okay. You probably want to consider using a starter fertilizer.
Okay.
And then coming in with a high-quality seed mix for that location. We have some great publications that are available to you that will walk you through this step-by-step. So if you want to contact your county extension office and ask for starting and renovating lawns. It's a nice publication to have on hand.
Yeah, Lawn Care Stand. I actually put in a lawn this past spring, and I kid with everyone that I prefer to give birth. starting a lawn from seed is a lot of work, and you're going to have to really stay on top of it in the spring more so in the fall than in the fall, because you really have to keep that seed bed moist.
Okay.
So if, you know, spring starts to come up and you don't have a ton of time or you have other projects going on, you might want to wait till fall. It's a much more, you have much more success in the fall putting in a lawn. But if you're determined to do it in the spring, just carve out part of your day for getting the sprinklers out every day.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Nap, thanks for calling. Or talk to the people at the sod farm.
Yeah, sodding could be another way to go.
Hydro seeding is also not a bad job.
Yeah, just pay someone to do it if you don't want to do it yourself. Yeah, there's a lot of options, and that publication is a really nice one to walk you through your options for either seeding, sodding, or hydro seeding.
And it's available at the County Extension office, or go online, too. Joanne could go online to the
Learning Store.
University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Learning Store.UWEX.EDU. Yeah, Learning Store first.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just pull it right off from there.
Mm-hmm.
Lucy and Ashlyn, we're on to you now. Hi, Lucy.
Hi. Great to be on the show.
Thank you.
I planted a bunch of potatoes this year and was very eager to dig them up. But when I did, I found they were full of scab. So I'm just wondering what that would come from and how to store them. Should I wash them ahead of time? I've washed them, and they don't seem to be keeping that well.
What what variety of potato did you plant?
I planted Cannabix and Yukon Golds.
Yeah, we grow Yukon Golds on our farm, and we do get a fair amount of scab, and some of that has to do with soil pH. Some of the potatoes prefer a soil pH that's just a little bit lower. So we get not a ton of scab on our potatoes, but, you know, a fair amount. And basically, all I do is peel it off and bake or cook the potatoes after that. It doesn't actually hurt people. It's just unsightly and kind of... you know, you wouldn't want to bake those potatoes.
So do you peel them, do you wash the dirt off to store them, or just leave them with...
You know, Yukon Golds are not the best storage potato there. So what you're going to do is want to kind of keep them in a cooler location. And you might have them, you know, through... You know, ours start getting kind of thin and wrinkly come January, February, even though they're kept in cool storage all winter. And you might get a little greening if there's any light on them. So if you could keep them in a cool, dark place, that'll lengthen out the period of time that you can eat them. But even after they start to kind of cannibalize themselves and, you know, kind of shrink and get a little bit soft, you can still use those. But I would only use them for, like, mashing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And should I wash the dirt off first or just leave the dirt, leave them the way they came out of the ground?
For storage, you can leave the dirt on.
Might be better.
Yeah, they'll probably keep longer in the dirt. But the only downside to that is if you have any real problems in there, if you have any soft rots, those are kind of harder to see with the dirt. And if you put those in with the rest of the potatoes, that can spread.
Yep.
Are you talking about leaving them outside in the dirt or in a bucket with the dirt on them?
In a bucket, probably in the basement in a dark place or someplace else that's kind of cooler.
Okay.
But not frozen.
No, something closer to 50, 55 degrees.
Alrighty, and I also read that wood ash might be a problem for them. Would that make the pH wrong to put wood ash in the soil?
Yes.
Okay, so plant them somewhere where there's no wood ash.
Right.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, well, thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Craig in Athens. Hi, Craig.
Hello. I have a question about my pasture. I have to say hello to Mike and Krista. I went with you guys to San Francisco.
Oh, hi.
I'm wondering, in my pasture, I have, it's all permanent pasture, and I have some places where there's moss. I'm wondering, you know, if I don't need to really worry about that, or or what I should do to encourage the grass to grow where the moss is growing.
It's probably shady there, isn't it?
It's all wide open.
Wide open.
Yeah, it might be a drainage problem. Oh. If you got a lot of water sitting there combined with a soil that's kind of a little more acidic, I would just leave it. I don't think there's any problem at all. Most people who try to control it try to do it with a little copper. You can get copper dust at any garden center. But eventually it just comes back because it's a sign of a drainage problem. So unless you want to really mess around with your drainage, which, you know, in a pasture I wouldn't do, then I would just leave it.
Okay. Will the grass ever grow through that or not likely?
Because it's too wet for grass.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, I should clarify the trip to San Francisco was for farm market manager training.
Yes. So it was completely work-related.
All right. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and Kristen Krakowski of Waukesha. She is the County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. Our guests here on Garden Talk, give us a call with your questions. Have open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And again, if you have a gardening question or a lawn question, maybe a tree question, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org as we visit with Mike Maddox and Kristen Krakowski on this edition of Garden Talk. And lots of callers coming online here, and we'll get to them in just a minute. What about this time of year now, moving plants? Is that you better have moved your plants indoors by this time if you want to get them indoors, I would expect.
Yeah, most of them are going really well into dormancy by now. Most of the trees in my yard have already lost all of their leaves, and, you know, the sedum's dying down, and everything's really kind of slowing down and taking its rest.
Mm-hmm. My trees lose their leaves one tree at a time. One tree loses its leaves, and then you have to rake that all up, and then you wait for the next tree, and then it loses its leaves, and then you wait for the third tree, and it loses its leaves. So it never happens at the same time, unfortunately. Anna in Sheboygan, we're on to you now. Hi, Anna.
Hi. I live in the town of Sheboygan, and I noticed this year, I think this is the first year I've noticed it, when the big leaves fall from the maple trees, or the usual fall color of gold. But they all of them have like a blotch the size between a penny and a nickel, and the blotch is a circular shape, and it's a blackish, purplish brown.
Well, it sounds like your tree had tar spot going into the fall.
And that's nothing to be concerned about. It happens whenever we have periods of cold, wet weather, but it's completely cosmetic. All you want to do is rake up those leaves and get rid of them so that disease isn't around in the leaves for next year to reinfect the tree.
Yeah. Our maples can get it very easily. They get all sorts of leaf spots. None of them are really anything to worry about.
All right. There you have it, Anna. Thank you for calling. Bessie in La Crosse, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was calling to ask about planting crocus in my lawn because I went to Hyde Park and I happened to be there when the crocus were blooming and it was like a carpet of crocus and it was beautiful. I wondered, how do I go about planting? I'm not much of a gardener.
Yeah.
How do I go about planting? Do I just buy the bulbs and lift up the grass, put them under, and put the grass back down?
The planting part's going to be easy. I just want to make sure we're getting the right plant. You could use crocus, but in my own lawn, what I use is something called pushkinia, or there's another name called squill. Okay. And I really like using that as a bulb lawn because it'll flower and the foliage will, and it'll flower and those flowers will be done before you ever have to mow the lawn for the first time.
Right.
And also the squirrels don't eat them.
And that's
well, they don't.
And that's a big concern because you don't want to be mowing down those leaves that are green and flowering, you know, when they're in flower. So you definitely want something, if you're going to naturalize them into your yard, you want something that's going to be done before you have to mow your lawn. The planting, all you have to do is really, you know, those are small bulbs. You're just going to have to find something and poke a hole down there and cover it back up with dirt.
I've used a soil core where we use for taking soil tests. I would do the cores, pull it out, push the bulb in, and then just put the soil in there again. You could also just take a shovel blade, cut it through your turf, tilt the shovel forward, drop your bulbs in there, then just close it back up.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be made to be difficult.
Yeah, just make sure your planting depth is right, and that's going to be make all the difference in your success.
Yeah, and approximate planting depth is always about 2 to 3 times the size of the bulb deep.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Jean in Menominee, we turn to you. Hi, Jean.
Hi, I got a couple of questions on trees.
Okay.
One, I have a locust tree that is just absolutely gorgeous until that last windstorm, not today, but with ice, the heavy snow.
Yes.
And a branch broke off.
Okay.
And I'd gone out and, like, shook it because it was, like, and I didn't realize, and it had a big old scar on it, and which looked like to be infected with something, and then the woodpeckers have been after it.
After the spot where the branch came off?
Just pecking all over the whole tree.
Okay. Typically when you see woodpeckers, they're going after insects that would be in the tree. If you've also had a branch break off, there could be a bigger problem that is more than we could diagnose over the radio. I think what you need to do is call yourself an arborist to come out and give that tree a thorough inspection. Make sure it has good architecture. Make sure it doesn't have any decay pockets. And just to assess the overall health of the tree, you can begin your search for an arborist in the Yellow Pages under tree service. And I would recommend calling several in order to find one you're comfortable working with. You can also go online to treesaregood.com, and there is some information available there on how to select an arborist, some criteria to look for, and I think it also gives you a place where you can enter in your zip code, and it'll pop up some names of some certified arborists who are available.
The Wisconsin Arborist Association website also has a really good listing to help you find somebody in your area. But I completely agree with Mike that you should call a few different people and see what they can do for you and what their rates are.
Yeah, the ISA website, treearsgood.com, and the WAA are associated with one another.
Yeah, the branch that broke off, it was perfectly good wood. It was from the heavy snow that we had.
It's the woodpeckers we're a little more concerned about, because if you have insects on the inside of your tree, that means something's going on that you can't see.
Yeah.
So
it's a young tree, too. So my other question was, I need to move one of my rhododendrons. It's not getting enough. It's getting crowded out. Do I do it now or in spring?
In the spring. And the reason I say that is because it keeps its leaves on all winter long. And if you were to move them now, you would be disrupting its root system. That would help with some of the moisture retention.
But wouldn't you want to wait until after it flowered if you wanted flowers?
To me, I think there's sometimes where you just got to say, I'm going to go a year without flowers.
Okay. You know, I'm just so happy it's still growing.
Yeah. Sure. That's the way I am too. Rhododendrons are just can be so marginal for most of us here in the state. I think Kristen and I could argue about this one on what's.
It's completely your preference.
Yeah, I say wait till the spring.
I have one more question for you guys.
All right.
I have a very, very old oak tree, and I'm not sure what kind of leaf problem it has. I heard it's oak wilt.
Are the leaves on it pointy or roundy? Do you know by off the top of your head?
Is it rounded? Are they rounded? Excuse me?
They get like almost like blisters on the leaves.
Blisters. You're in good shape.
And then the actual acorn pod is like the size of a golf ball, and it's just all poofy and nothing in there.
All of them?
Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
I think we would need to see this one, just to make sure.
It's an oak tree, but
once again, we're going to have to direct you to bring a sample to your local office to have the county educator or a master gardener look at it. We have the capability of taking some pictures of it and sending it out to the listserv so we can all take a look at it. I am very curious what you're seeing. So if you could take some pictures and forward it on.
I have bur oaks in the front of my yard, and they are kind of the... the acorns are kind of have a fuzzy top to them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. They never develop into acorns. They stay as a pod.
Oh. Yes.
And you know that like kind of like a smoke bomb type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You step on them and they're all moldy inside.
And that might be an insect. It might be an insect gall is what I'm thinking you have on there. It's not the actual acorns you're seeing. You're seeing
like
hard
a snippet
insect
gall.
Yeah, a hard insect gall, and those can be pretty big, and mm-hmm. they're kind of almost muddy looking. And those two would just be a cosmetic problem, not anything you would really need to deal with. But feel free to take it into your local county extension office so that we can give you a little bit better idea of what it is.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you for all your help. I listen to you guys as much as I can.
All right, great. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, just probably I wouldn't doubt an insect sort of gall. Susanna in McQuantico, it is your turn. Hi.
Hi there. I have a question about a bougainvillea.
Okay.
I bought one for the first time this summer, and I have it in a pot, and I was training it to be a standard, and it was just beautiful. I had it in full sun. It was growing wonderfully. And now I've brought it in, and all the beautiful flowers have fallen off, and, well, it's not looking that great. So I'm wondering what I need to do to overwinter this bougainvillea so I can, you know, put it out again in summer.
Have patience.
Yeah,
that's the big thing.
Well,
they will get a little ratty looking over the winter time. And
will it have flowers on it or no?
Yeah,
it's so little light. I mean, just whenever we bring any kind of plant from outdoors to indoors, there's such a shock in the difference in temperature and humidity, and at this time of the year, the light, that it's just a real traumatic experience for the plants. And really, the goal for most of these plants is just to keep them alive and in decent health during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to expect flowers, you would have to have grow lights and be, you know, misting and all sorts of stuff. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, all plants need to rest in between flowering. So just let it rest this winter, and then you can start maybe fertilizing a little more frequently mm-hmm. in the spring and start getting it ready to bloom.
Yeah. What your big concern is, just making sure you don't overwater it in the winter, because you might get a root rot. You'll want to keep an eye out for insects on it because you've brought it from outside in. If that's the case, maybe a good bath with an insecticidal soap would be an option.
Okay.
Don't fertilize it, like Kristen said. Wait till the spring when it needs to start growing again and when you can start getting it outside.
All right.
The other thing is I also started growing it to be a standard.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if you have any tips on that. I've never done that before.
I assume what you mean is that you're limbing it up so that it's like a tree form?
Yes.
Yeah, I would just keep snipping off those little branches and encouraging the growth in, you know, the direction you're looking for.
Even during the winter?
I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of growth during the winter.
But so if it stays looking the same, it's okay?
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Gabriella in Delafield emailed us and said, I buy a heliotrope plant every winter, every year, but do not have the space or light to overwinter. How difficult is it to save heliotrope seed from a plant, and when would you start seed?
I have no clue without any references in front of me. This is one where I'd like to dive into it a bit more if you want to forward that email on to me.
You can always experiment with it. I mean, I would call your local county extension agent, and they can probably look it up for you, and in Delafield, that would be me. So feel free to call the county extension office, and somebody who answers the horticulture helpline will be happy to look up that information and give you the accurate response to that Mike and I just can't seem to come up with.
Nope.
All right.
Zero.
Thank you very much for calling. And on to Ryan in Madison. Ryan, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. I've got a question about getting a tree for my front lawn. I think we kind of want something that maybe has like some flowers, looks pretty, you know, during the warmer seasons, but maybe doesn't grow too huge. And I'm wondering what's a good choice for the Madison area.
Well, there are a number of options out there. I would be needing to know the light levels in your front yard, the amount of space you have in your front yard, and your soil type. And without really knowing that, I could just venture some guesses, though. In my own yard, I have an amelanker or a serviceberry, which has a medium-sized tree, has white spring flowers, has summertime berries, and has just brilliant red fall color. And it's really great for attracting the birds. So for a very multi-functional tree, that's a nice one that can grow in our area.
Can you see what that one's called again?
Amelanker or serviceberry.
Yeah, it's a native tree, too, which is really nice.
That's a nice, yeah, that is nice.
So that's a nice general one that I could recommend for the Madison area. But if you're wanting to look into it a little bit more, we will need to know your soil type. Is it a heavy clay or a sand? Which
probably
you can get
not.
A little bit
probably
of both.
Probably a clay soil.
Well, I've got sand in my little yard.
And full sun. Should we assume that is it going to get a pretty good amount of sun where you're going to put it?
Yeah, it's going to be not much else around it other than the house. So it'll probably get, 5/8 a day of sun.
Well, and is it also on the road where there will be salt spray, or is it in your backyard where there would be free from salt? Because there are some really great trees that are sensitive to salt.
It'll be in the backyard, but it's going to be, we've got sidewalk, the curb, the sidewalk, and some distance on the front yard. So I don't think it's going to be in any danger of salt.
Yeah. I would go with that one. Otherwise, you could get online.
What do you think about magnolias?
Well,
I just recently bought a crab apple, a really nice one for my front yard, and I've been not wanting to buy one for a long time because of apple scab, and I didn't want a tree that was going to look ratty half of the year. But I found a really nice one with disease resistance, and there are, a handful of ones that are disease resistant out there if you're interested in that, and that's similar to the amelanchier. It's going to get a little bit bigger, but you can choose from some shapes. Some of them have more width than height. Some of them are kind of more round. And there's some more options there. But I got one called Royal Raindrops, which is a red cut leaf one, and I just really love it.
Okay. I have one other question. I just bought an apple tree, put it in the backyard, and there's another apple tree maybe two blocks from where this one is. I'm wondering if I should buy another one. So that we can get apples, or if it'll just happen naturally.
I think we use enough apple trees and crab apple trees in our neighborhoods that pollination shouldn't be an issue. There's a lot of crab apples used.
A lot of crab apples.
Yeah, crab apples will pollinate your apple trees.
And don't expect fruit right away if it's a small tree. Usually it takes 2 or 3 years for apple trees to start producing fruit. So if after that you're still not getting fruit, then you might want to consider it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Jim in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good afternoon. I have two questions. The first one is about trees again. I've got a very sunny lot that I'd like to put a tree in, but I've got a lot of rock in my soil. Are there any trees better suited for rocky soil versus non-rocky?
In general, yes.
I thought you were just going to leave it there.
Well, I could.
In general, yes. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. It goes down to knowing some other factors. Do you need a big tree or small tree?
I would like a big tree. I've got about 40 feet from my walkway to my house to the road, about 55 foot wide.
Okay, so you can take a larger tree. Again, yes. just some basic trees that I could recommend for Janesville, because you're in my neck of the woods now. We can do hackberries really well down there. You might be able to do a hybrid elm in that area. I was also thinking Kentucky coffee tree.
That was what came to my mind, because that's exactly the perfect size for that.
Mm-hmm.
But the tree? It's called Kentucky coffee tree. It's got kind of a leaves like a honey locust. They're little small leaflets that are all attached. It's got what you don't want to get is you really need to get one that's a male.
You're
they have both male
again.
Yes, I know. There's male and female trees. The female trees produce just copious amounts of pods and will litter your lawn. So if you were going to get a Kentucky coffee tree, you'd want something that was a male, and the variety on that's usually espresso. But it's a really beautiful tree. It's one of those up-and-coming trees that are starting to get really popular.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to just pull it up online and take a look at it and see if it's something you'd like. But, it doesn't have hardly any problems at all, with diseases or insects. It's a really low-maintenance tree.
And we've got several around town that you come take a look at. If you want to just give my office a call, we can point you in the direction of those trees.
Okay, that would be great.
All right. Thanks.
Second question. Okay. Was about tulips. As a kid growing up in Milwaukee, my mom would always insist on digging up her tulip bulbs and then replanting them later. Whereas my wife now, she just leaves them and they come back every year just fine. Has mm-hmm. something changed, or was my mom a little crazy?
Well, your mom could be crazy, and it had nothing to do with the tulips. I will say this about tulips. If you have heavy soil that has poor drainage, you're probably not going to have a lot of luck keeping them in the ground
for many years.
You can probably get them for several years. You'll have 1 year of really great blooms, the next year a little fewer blooms, and then finally you'll get to the point where it's, okay, where'd my tulips go? So if your mom was lifting them, she probably realized she had a heavy clay soil and this was helping them survive the winter.
And the other issue is that there are lots of little critters that love tulip bulbs, so she just might have been losing them during the winter to those little critters and wanted to protect them from
tulips,
those.
Tulips are tasty.
Yes.
So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. All right. I didn't know what the deal was, but thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Bob emailed us and says, I have a large raspberry patch that has stopped producing fruit, cut it back last fall. This year, the plants look real healthy, green and leafy, but no flowers or raspberries. What am I doing wrong?
One of the things is with all with raspberry patches is once they start filling in and getting really dense, just like with a lot of your perennial plants, they'll stop producing fruit. They're too crowded. They're competing too much for space, and there's just not enough nutrients available for everybody to be able to fruit. So you might want to renovate that bed and start removing some chunks in between to try to give them a little more space, and either give those away or, you know, make your bed a little bit bigger. And when you do that, you probably want to amend it a little, put some compost and things in there because you might have really depleted the nutrients in that area. So I would start there. I would start by giving them a little more space. The other thing is a lot of times beds are put in one location and then we leave them there for 5 or 10 years and we don't notice the fact that all of our trees are shading them and the general environment has changed. So take a look at that. If they're not getting enough sun, that could be an issue too.
Thanks very much for that email. Mike Maddox and Kristen Krokowski are guests today on this edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question on this edition of Garden Talk, I hope you'll join in. The number to call 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Meg in Millston has a question or comment for you guys. Let's go to Meg. Hi, Meg.
Hi, Larry and guests. I have a question about garlic. I live in south central Minnesota. We don't have a show like yours on our public station, so I had to come to Wisconsin to call you. And I have some garlic to get in. Our field that where it's going has yet to be disked, and it is just sopping wet. And the clock is ticking, and I'm wondering how much longer do I have to get my garlic crop in?
I think you're fine as long as the ground's not frozen. Yeah. I mean, it should be, I mean, you're cool, but I don't think that it's really a problem. You probably have a few weeks yet.
Okay, well, that's reassuring because I'd always heard that it should go in October, and, you know, we've got one day left, and I didn't know if it needed to get some growth.
There's always the ideal.
It comes in.
Yeah, there's always there's always the ideal time, but the rest of us just kind of muddle along as best we can. I don't think you're going to see any serious losses if it's another week or two.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
say garlic can't tell time. Yeah. You won't know that it's November.
Thanks, Meg. Thanks a lot for calling and for listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Donald in Long Lake, on to you. Hi, Donald.
Hello. I just have a question to try to understand what is going on. Earlier this year, I purchased some jalapeno plants from the local greenhouse here. And I put four of them in the garden, and they grew and produced normally. And one of them I put up in my hydroponics garden. Now, the one in the hydroponics garden grew twice as fast as the others and got twice as big. It was very, very slow to set flowers. And when I finally did get some flowers and some fruit, instead of getting regular jalapenos, I got little round red balls. And I just wondered what was happening.
The little round red balls are probably still peppers. They didn't grow very big, and they ripened up to red. Jalapeno peppers, if you leave them on the plant long enough, will turn red. Any green pepper that you harvest is always is usually on its way to some other color. But, you know, when you feed the pepper plant in the hydroponic system and you're throwing so many nutrients in it, it probably has too much nitrogen. It was spending all of its time putting its energy into leaf production that it didn't have enough energy left to worry about flowers and fruit. So if you want to do hydroponics with the peppers, you're going to need to back off on that nitrogen a little bit more. It might also have something to do with the temperatures. A lot of times, you're looking for specific temperatures for, flowers to, or for plants to set flower. So I'm not exactly sure what those are for jalapenos, but I know that it's usually pretty far into the year before we can get, our peppers to set flower. So, a lot of it's environmental.
All right. There you have it. Thank you very much for calling. And we have Dave emailing us, Dave and Ione. We live in southwest Wisconsin and have two young sycamore trees in our yard. They have branches that start at about 3 feet above the ground. Could we trim those lower branches at this time of year? They've lost most of their leaves.
Yes and no. Yeah, you can always go out and chop a branch off whenever you want. But the best time to do your pruning for your deciduous trees is in that late dormant season. February, March, early April. That offers several benefits to your trees. It's the big one is if you were to go out and make your cut now, that wound's going to be exposed to the winter winds all season long. And by the time it gets through the season, that wound's going to be very dry and cracked. And I've done this, so I've witnessed it. It is much better to do those prunings in the latter half of the winter, very early spring, so they're not exposed and they to the environment and they don't dry out before healing starts to occur. So wait is the answer. But do prune them. Sycamore trees, they have the ability to get nice and large, and you don't need a branch coming off 3 feet from the ground. But just a little bit of a warning with sycamores. We are at the northernmost part of their range. Where I'm from central Illinois, we have them all over in the woods and they're beautiful to have. But when we get this far north, you may find they will be subject to winter dieback once they get to a certain size. And they can also get anthracnose in the branches. Anthracnose in our other trees is pretty much just a cosmetic disorder of the leaves that causes spotting to occur. In our anthracnose, it can actually jump to the branches, cause cankers to form, and that can cause some disfigurement in those trees. So I love sycamores. It's one of my favorite trees. But just here in Wisconsin, we need to be a little more careful with them.
All right. And we have an email from Judith who says, when they dug my well 17 years ago, the well digger's report showed the first 40 feet from the surface down is sand. It's like trying to grow things on a beach. I never have a rain puddle. Is there anything that grows well in sand? We do have several pines and some maple trees, but ornamental bushes don't seem to do well. So it sounds like she wants some ornamental bushes. Any ornamental bush that does well in sandy conditions?
I'll leave this one to Mike.
I'm thinking.
I can't remember the last time I saw sand.
Yeah.
We're squarely in clay country.
Yeah. You're looking for things that like that drainage, and I am thinking what it is. I really would love to have my books in front of me.
Yeah, look for something that's drought tolerant, and you might need to actually water those ornamental shrubs mm-hmm. on a more regular base. You know, the whole point of sand is it doesn't hold moisture, so more regular irrigation might keep some of the other bushes.
I'm trying to think of some plants that I've seen growing in some other sandy locations I've known, and they had success with like viburnums in there, and there's so many different viburnums you can put in. I know some of the real water pigs you need to be careful with. Hydrangeas might be a struggle. You might be able to do some small trees like that amelanchier I talked about earlier.
And they do have a shrub form of those. They're just mm-hmm. a larger shrub. Those, mm-hmm. yeah, I agree with you. Those would work well.
I think you have some listings up there. I think we could probably answer your question a little more thoroughly if you could send us an email one-on-one and we can send you some links to some things.
All right. Thanks very much for calling and for emailing. I'm sorry. Let's turn to Dan and Marinette. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is sort of a follow-up call from the fellow whose mom, crazy or not, was digging up the tulip bulbs. And I have two questions, and this is about tulips. One is, a couple of years ago, I got a pot of flowering tulips in the spring, and they looked real nice, and I had wanted to put some around the base of some maple trees that I have, young maple trees, about 10 to 12 years old, in my front yard. And I took the tulips out of the pot when they were still blooming, just dug a hole in near the base of one of these maple trees and plopped them in. And one group did fine. And they come back every year and they look real nice and red and pretty. The other group got munched up by the squirrel brigade in our yard. So the two questions I have is, one, if I want to just plant some bulbs this fall, and I start scratching around, you know, within about a foot or two of the base of these, you know, 10 to 12-year-old maple trees, am I going to be doing any damage to roots that are near the surface? And if not, if I can plant those bulbs, any ideas for how to keep the little beasties away until these things get established?
Okay, if you're going to be planting around your existing trees, you do need to be careful of the roots, but don't totally freak out about the process.
Okay.
When you're digging around the tree, you want to be careful to avoid damaging the large roots that are coming out, the large structural roots.
Okay.
As you're digging, if you're cutting through little fibrous roots that are just there for water absorption, they'll regrow those with no problem.
Okay.
But when you start getting into what's known as the flare of the tree or some of those main structural roots coming off, if you do damage to those, that's
right.
Where you can introduce decay pockets into the tree.
Okay.
So my recommendation for working around trees is go slow, go carefully, go by hand. Just don't take a shovel blade, sink it in there, and go, uh-oh, I cut through a root.
Right.
So just take your time when you do it. As for keeping the critters away, one of the things you can do is to have something smelly on hand. And what a lot of people use is they have a bag of Milorganite. It's the type of fertilizer. It's a very low-grade fertilizer. It stinks to high heaven. As soon as you put your bulbs in, put a light layer or dusting of these pellets on top of that. No squirrel will want to stick its nose down into that.
And if you're willing to not do tulips, daffodils are a much better selection for people who have a lot of animal pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Daffodils are just not palatable to most things.
And they're hardier for our soils, too.
Yeah.
They're much sturdier plant if you're having any kind of clay content. I'd recommend daffodils over tulips.
Okay, so and that stuff was Milorganite?
Milorganite. You can go to most garden centers in the area and find it. If you're opposed to using Milorganite, you should get some chicken wire and just pin some chicken wire down over your bulbs, and that will keep them from digging through it.
Okay, now that's on the surface?
Yes.
Because I don't want to bury that chicken wire.
No, you'll forget it.
Right.
Yeah, just pin it down to the surface.
It could be entertaining during the winter, too, if they really decide they want those bulbs and they're trying to get through the chicken wire.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. I like the daffodil idea. My wife's a big fan of daffodils.
So much easier.
Mm-hmm. And they're so much easier. Chris and Milton, on to you. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been listening to your program this morning, and both of your guests had mentioned a type of tree, and I was just wondering where those trees could be obtained. I believe your lady guest mentioned the Royal Raindrops crab tree.
Those are a newer variety. I actually got mine at Johnson's Nursery in Menominee Falls this year, but they are, because they're a newer variety, there's Royal Raindrops, and then there's another related tree that has a yellow berry, and it's got a similar name. But because those are new, they're just coming on, so if you have a local garden center and you tell them in advance that you'd like one, most garden centers will order you a plant in, especially the ones that are a little more locally owned and deal with more specialized types of trees. So usually when I'm looking for one, I'll go to a local nursery and tell them I'm looking for this, and they'll tell me if they're going to get it next year, and if they're not, they'll tell me, you know, look it up, find out what they can get it in for, and tell me the price, and I can pre-order.
Okay. Then the other tree was the Kentucky coffee bean tree.
The Kentucky coffee tree.
And is that available at pretty much any of the nurseries then as well?
You're going to have to look. It can
They go quick.
They go real quick, especially if you're going for the espresso cultivar. That's that's the male variety that Kristen was talking about. There's also another one. I think it's called Prairie Titan.
But I haven't seen that one anywhere.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one anywhere. I don't have the aversion to the seed pods that Kristen does. So you can usually get a female one pretty cheap if you're willing to pick those up. But if you're wanting one of the male cultivars, that's another one you may have to put on order.
Yeah, and they aren't a cheap tree. It's not like you're going out and buying a sugar maple for, you know, $59.99. You know, depending on how big they are, they're probably going to cost you at least $160. And what you're going to get for $160, the Kentucky coffee tree looks really, really sad for the first couple of years. It's a gangly little teenager until it starts filling out. So yeah. Don't expect it to have a lot of wow power the first few years it's in there.
Yeah, I call it the ugly duckling of the trees.
Yeah, but it turns into a
beautiful tree.
There you have it. Thank you very much, Chris, for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and with Kristen Krokowski of Waukesha, the Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, on this edition of Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. He also directs education at the Rotary Botanical Garden in Janesville, Wisconsin, and Kristen Krokowski of Waukesha, the Waukesha County Commercial Horticulture Educator. Join in with your gardening questions at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Marcus in Green Bay. Marcus, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I'm calling to ask advice of how to trim some rose bushes down for the winter. And what happened was earlier this summer, I was assigned a task of trimming these about 30 rose bushes that have never been trimmed in their life. I think they're about 25 years old. They were like 6 feet tall, and there was a whole bunch of dead growth. So all that was left that I could save was these, you know, gangly stalks that were, you know, three feet long, and they're kind of out there blowing in the wind and everything. And they managed to make it through the summer pretty healthy. But I'm worried about the winter. You know, we're going to get some wet snow and all that, and it's just going to flatten them down. So I'm wondering how far down can I take these stalks? You know, can I go below where the leaves are, or, you know, just take off the ends, or what do you recommend?
Well, the true rose aficionados out there will probably skewer me for telling you this, but with roses, I've heard a lot of different ways you can prune them. And the way I just pruned my own roses in my yard was I just cut them back to probably about half their size. I didn't want to cut them all the way down. I just made them so that they wouldn't hold too much snow on them, or I can get out in the yard without being torn up by the thorns. What I'm going to do is I've just cut them back that far. I'm going to wait till next spring to see what tissue dies, and then I'm just going to cut off the dead. Now, that said, I'm using shrub roses, so they're on their own rootstock, and I'm not having to do any mulch or anything around them either. Do you know what type of roses you have?
No, but they're the kind, they were real huge bushes. They were like 6 feet tall and gigantic, and the dead stuff I removed was like sometimes over an inch in diameter.
The flowers, when you saw the flowers, were they kind of more of a flat flower, or were they more like a bud flower like you'd see at a florist shop?
More flat, and they would lose their, I had them at my house when I still had my house, and these ones here, they would, they'd lose their petals right away because there were so many flowers on each one and they weren't healthy, but yeah, more flat.
Okay. The only thing we're concerned about, they are some kind of shrub rose. The thing we're concerned about is they might be what's called multiflora rose, and that's actually an invasive plant. And to be honest, if they are the invasive multiflora rose and you've really cut them back, they'll probably come back just fine.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll need to have a conversation on how to kill them.
Like almost the kind you find on railroad tracks or something, but more a little.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah. You might want to get rid of them anyway.
Yeah. Probably that's the conversation we may need to have. And the easiest way to do that is to get like a backhoe in there and just pull them up. they're going to be a real tough plant to try to kill.
Because they have sentimental value for the owner. They're they go way back and everything. So they're and one other thing, they're embedded. There's stones around them. You know, the decorative stones. Would it help if I rake the stones around a little bit and put mulch, or is that unnecessary?
Decorative stones aren't really a good call for most, you know, for mulching most beds. So, you know, when you're working with a homeowner, you really have to listen to their input.
Yeah.
So it really depends on what they're comfortable with, but I wouldn't put mulch on top of rocks.
No, I mean rake the rocks around a little bit, get them away, and then...
For any other woody plant, I'm not a fan of using a rock mulch around them. I think that causes too much problems. However, since we're trying to advise you to kill the plant, part of me wants to tell you to leave it. But so... I'm giving you a mixed answer there.
Yes, but if this is a client,
you need
and
to
they
do
are
the client
paying
wants.
You to take care of the yard.
Notes.
Yeah, definitely listen to them. But we get to the point and we decide we're looking to keep these guys healthy, removing the rock mulch, you know, pulling that back and putting some mulch around that would definitely help.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Dawn in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, I received a hydrangea as a gift this spring, and I kept it outside in a pot, and now I've brought it in. What do I do to keep that over the winter?
What color was it?
It was a pink, and the only real sun I have is in a west window. And the only other sun I have is a south-facing window, but it is a sunroom, and it's not heated.
Okay, you're probably going to have some struggles with it without the brightest light you can get. A western window, a southern window would be ideal for wintertime indoors, because that's be the brightest light you can get.
Well, can I keep it in the sunroom? It'll get...
I think it might be okay being cool. You're going to probably notice it to lose its leaves. The flowers are to drop off. That's natural whenever you bring a plant from outdoors to in. You're going to be experimenting here. This is a test to see if it will like your room. It's probably going to get ugly on you. You're going to see if it regrows. And then you're just going to try to get it to limp through the winter until you can bring it outside into the spring again.
Yeah, and the reason we're giving this advice is because we think it's a non-hardy hydrangea, one that wouldn't grow in our area. Normally, if it was something that was hardy, we would advise you to get it in the ground as soon as possible.
Well, my son bought it for us, and he said that they told him that it could be planted in the ground, but the little card that came with it didn't really say that, so I wasn't sure. So I thought, well, I'd bring it in for the winter. But
do you have the little card?
I don't know what happened to it.
Okay. If somehow you can either find the little card or figure out what the name of it is, they all have a botanical name on those cards.
Uh-huh.
If you want to talk to somebody at your local county extension office, they can tell you if it's hardy or not. And I do that sooner rather than later, because if it is a hardy one, you really do want to get into the ground before the ground freezes, and that would be your best chance of keeping it alive and well.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Corey in Sparta, on to you now. Hi, Corey.
Hi. I have a grapefruit tree that I've been keeping as a house plant. It was my mother's originally. I'm pretty sure she just got a seed out of like a grapefruit. She bought it at the store and stuck it in the dirt. It was about 7 feet tall, and I moved in the wintertime, and I killed it. So I cut it all the way back to the soil and put it outside in a pot in the summer, and it grew up to about 3 feet. And now I've moved it indoors again, and the newer leaves are kind of curling in on mm-hmm. themselves, and I'm worried if maybe it's going to die anyway.
Well,
I don't know what to do with it at all.
Whenever you move something from outdoors to in and you change the environment, it's going to drop all the leaves and regrow new ones.
Okay.
It's so. Just trauma. It's a traumatic experience for that little tree. It should come out of it. If you know, it's been doing really well and growing mm-hmm. really well for you, so I would expect it to come back out of it.
Just during the winter months, don't overwater it, because it's not going to be growing too rapidly. Don't over-fertilize it. In fact, you may want to lay off fertilizer until the days start getting longer again next spring and before you move it outdoors.
Okay, it's gonna I've never be fertilized enough. It. Should I just wait until spring to fertilize it then?
Yes. Okay. You don't want to fertilize it during the winter.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Eric, who says, I have birds in my home area, and they love millet sprays. I'd love to grow some this spring. I can't find information about growing it. What can you tell me about it? What's the best way to start it from seed? Can I use the seeds from the millet I buy? Time of year should I plant and harvest?
Well, it should be fairly easy to do. We at the gardens use an ornamental millet, the purple leafed one, and we put that in the gardens, and it does a great job attracting birds. We get the seeds from the garden through the mail order catalogs every spring. We plant them into little trays, and then we just plant them outdoors, and they look like little purple corn. So it's pretty easy to do. You could probably save the seeds from any number of varieties of it. If you're trying to do the purple one, it probably won't come back looking purple.
And regular millet, the non-ornamental millet, is not a real attractive plant. It almost looks like you're growing sweet corn in your yard. So if you're looking for something that's attractive during the year and you can still use for birds in the fall, I would recommend one of the ornamental millets.
But it's fairly easy. Just you want to do the seeds into the little seeds packs each spring, plant them out probably around June 1. Fairly easy to do.
All right.
Just follow the instructions on the seed packet.
Aris in Juneau County wonders, has a question about elephant ear bulbs. How do you overwinter this type of bulb? They're so expensive. I'd like to know what I'm doing wrong. Previously, I put it in peat moss and put it in the root cellar, but it still got soft.
Well, that sounds like you were on the right track. Perhaps you didn't let it dry out enough before you put it into the root cellar. I would like to see them go into some sort of potting mix or sphagnum moss that is kept dry when you put them in there. That'll help cut back on some of the diseases. It just sounds like you should let them dry it out a little bit more before you did that. But the concept of putting them into a unheated room, but that one that doesn't get freezing, is the concept you're shooting for.
Georgia is a first-time home buyer, and they have many trees in their lot, even though the lot isn't that large. Wondering what time of year would be good to have a tree doctor come in and do some pruning. Probably in the...
Well, actually, my recommendation is if you can have your tree doctor come in during the growing season so they can look at the health of the tree, that's a good time. The health is going to be how many leaves they have. Does it have any dieback? How does the tree look? The other thing you want to do is have your tree doctor come in during, like now, so they can look at the form of the tree, to look at its architecture and structure, to make sure all the branch unions are correct, that there's no double leaders. And then, depending on the tree species, to actually do the pruning in that late dormant season is the best time. So that February, March, early April is a good time to get in there to do your tree work.
Find yourself a certified arborist and away you go. Let's go to Terry in Green Bay. Terry, hello to you.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
My question for your guests would be, what I have is I've got over 50 smaller tamaracks I've been trying to get to grow. I have problems with during the rut when the few deer we do have left around here, and they rut and they just rub the living heck out of. I lose usually 3 or 4 every year. I know I've tried liquid fence, but my question is, will Milorganite help repel those animals?
When we're talking deer, it may have some short-term effect, but I think they're going to get used to it, and then we'll start coming back around again. If you're willing to put the effort into the trees, I'd suggest putting some sort of corral around them, maybe driving 3 posts around the trees and then wrapping it with chicken wire or some other like baling twine or baling wire.
Snow fence and things like that. There's a lot of even deer fencing material around at most of your hardware stores.
Yeah, you're just looking to put a physical barrier that's going to keep those bucks from getting up close to the tree to do the damage.
Yeah, but I've got over 55 of them, and they're spread around a swamp area that I'm trying to get, to come back with tamarack.
A big dog out in the area then.
Yeah.
You have a lot of trees, and this is just one of those problems you might have to just tackle.
And there's some other things that have spotty results, and they include things like putting perfume soap, especially soap that has been used in your shower that has some human scent to it, and putting that on a rope and putting that in the trees. People use human hair, so they use cut human hair. What you're trying to do is give that that area the scent of humans and hopefully scare off some of the deer. But hungry deer will overcome their inhibitions and go after those trees anyway. Yeah. So it really depends on how much other food is in the area. If you can keep them off of there. Yeah. So, you might want to deer fence some of the real critical ones and then try something else on the other. There's also a lot of hot pepper sprays and things like that. But, still,
Not when they're rubbing their antlers.
Yeah, this isn't hunger. It's sorry. The rut. Yeah, the trick with any kind of animal control is you need to rotate it because they'll become used to whatever's there. So you'll need to mix up scent, sound, physical barriers, maybe just put some decoys out there of, I'm trying to think what scares deer.
Yeah, I don't think the owl's going to work on this one.
Yeah, try a scarecrow. It is a multi-prong approach. You need to just keep mixing it up every week or every 2 weeks to try to keep them away.
My barber's saving hair from her shop.
Yeah, that's a good start, but it's going to probably take more than that because when these deer are on the rut, they have their mind on one thing.
I know.
And it'll be very hard for you to take their mind off that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see, Jackie in Rhinelander next. Hi, Jackie.
Well, I hope you can help us. We've had a nice shrub, cranberry shrub, for about 3 years, and it's 5 foot now. I believe it's supposed to get 10 to 12 feet. And we put fertilizer stakes and nitrogen, but we don't have any cranberries for the birds.
Stop fertilizing. Whenever you're pushing that leaf growth and you're trying to get it put on leaves, it doesn't have any energy to devote to putting into fruit.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting to do something to help the health of the shrub, let me spit that out, I could rather encourage you to put down a layer of wood mulch around the base of the plant to remove any competition with turf grass. It helps promote roots, helps conserve moisture. Lay off the fertilizer, and in time it'll balance it out again, and you'll get the flowers and fruit.
That it's only 3 years old, will it bear? Should it have bared? I mean,
it should have been close. The other thing is, I'm assuming you're meaning like high bush cranberry, which is a type of viburnum. They need to cross pollinate too in order to get the berries to form. So you may need to look getting a different variety of high bush cranberry in your yard to ensure that cross pollination to occur.
Oh, okay.
It means buying another one for your
yard.
The real key with cross-pollination with any kind of plant where you need two of them is making sure that you have two that flower at the same time. If you get ones that flower at different times, you're still not going to be able to get pollination.
Yeah.
So I'd have to buy one that was 3 years old now? Or
No, just one that if it flowers in July, you'd have to make sure the other one flowered in July.
Okay, thanks for your help. You guys are great.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Rich in Richland Center, on to you. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. Number one is, how do I get rid of those toadstools in my yard? I mean, they're just inundated with toadstools. And when would be a good time to cut back my burning bush?
Do you want to do the burning bush?
You do the toadstools.
Okay. We'll save the bad news for later.
Yeah. burning bush. Are you wanting to just prune it down or get rid of it completely?
No, I have dwarf burning bush.
Okay.
I just want to cut them down so I can shape them in the spring.
Okay, well, you just want to do that kind of major pruning in the late dormant season, as I said, with some of those other trees that have come up just recently. In that February, March, early April period is the good time to do any kind of major renovation to a woody plant that drops its leaves. So I would wait for that period.
Yeah, and the key to that is just make sure you don't remove more than a third of that shrub all at one time, because that can hurt the health of the tree. The toadstools...
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, the toadstools, again, is a drainage problem. So unless you're looking to renovate your yard and change your drainage... I suggest you just keep mowing them down. You know, the toadstools are really just the fruiting body or the reproductive structure of the fungus. And some of those underground fungus stretch, you know, through states. So it's not like you're going to be able to kill that underground fungus that's causing the toadstools. All you can do is change the environment so that they won't grow there. And that's changing the drainage of your yard.
All right.
Yeah, they seem to spread. I thank you very much for the information.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I would go back to buck rub on trees here. We have a slender, Lori says we have a slender clump of aspen we planted a little over a year ago. We've just noticed that all four of the thin trunks have been rubbed really hard by buck antlers. Mm-hmm. We normally cover the trunks with tubing this time of year. And now we have, after the damage is done, is there anything else they could do to repair the damage? Not much, really.
Nope. With aspen, I think they're going to be vigorous enough growers that they'll recover from it.
Yeah, just wait it out.
Yeah.
And let's see. Our asparagus is starting to look a little bit sparse, Susan says, in the bed we have. When should we plant more sets, and how do we keep track of the new sets so we don't pick them for the first 3 years?
They've actually changed the rule on that. You can pick them after 1 year. The rule of thumb is just don't, you know, you're going to have smaller spears, but you can definitely pick them earlier, so that's not as big of a concern.
And those new asparagus varieties, those males are really good.
Yeah, so it really shouldn't be an issue.
How do you prune a Schefflera plant to braid them, you know?
Really, you're supposed to do that as while they're young, before the twigs get woody. Mm-hmm. So really the goal on that is to have young enough plants where they're not really woody yet and start braiding them as they go, and you'll have to do a little bit each year. Mm-hmm. Those tall braided ones that you see that in the ficus and the garden centers, they've taken years to get them to that point.
Mm-hmm. And George in Columbus, on to you now. Hi, George.
Listen, I've got a small grove of aspen trees that have been hit by a large, long antenna boring beetle. And they leave a half-inch hole when they come out, and after six or seven of them have been in there, the tree falls down.
Yeah.
Oh, that kind of sounds like Asian longhorn beetle, but I don't know if that's a host. I would really, really like it if you would grab one of those insects and either bring them to your county extension office or send them to the insect diagnostic lab in Madison, and there's no charge for that if you send those in.
What do I do about the trees?
Not a lot.
Trees are gone.
Yeah. Let us figure out what the pest is, and then with that, give us more information on giving you a diagnosis on what to do with
the trees.
So if
you have other trees that aren't affected yet, will be able to help you effectively tell you what to do about those trees. But
okay, the insect comes out around June. It's about an inch and a half long.
Yeah.
It's a longhorn beetle. It's brown colored.
Yeah, it does sound like an Asian longhorn, but there's so many good-sized long antennaed beetles out of there, we'd really need to be sure. And then, you know, basically we can recommend the right insecticide. There's a lot of insecticides out there, but if you don't pick the right one for your bug, it's not going to help at all. So there's...
Is that a systemic insecticide? Or
there are some, but I'm not sure what the exact treatment is for the beetle you have.
Before you do anything, we want to see the bug.
Who would I contact?
The insect you would go to your county extension office. They can forward it to the insect diagnostic lab.
Yes.
Or if you have a digital photo of it, you can email it.
Either to one of us or to Phil Pelletieri at the Insect Diagnostic Lab, and I believe his contact information is both on the website for Larry's show, but you can also just put in Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Lab and come up with the Diagnostic Lab's contact information. What county are you in?
Columbia.
Oh, you should be fine. There's a horticulture person in that area. And
okay.
Even if, call the extension office, and if for some reason they don't want to deal with it, you're more than welcome to call, contact Mike or I. And we'll kind of expedite things once you have a beetle.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Mike and Kristen, thank you. The time flew by.
Sure did.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always fun. You'll come back and be with us again, I hope.
Oh, that'd be great.
All right. Love to have you. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator and Director of the Education Programs at the Rotary Botanical Gardens in Janesville. Kristen Krokowski of Waukesha, Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, our guest, and we'll have him back and we'll do it again. Karen Johansson of Johansson's Greenhouses joins us next Friday on Garden Talk. And on Monday, we visit with Peter Green of InfoStar about your computer problems. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.